The spiritual theme of the month is atonement. And today I want to explore how we find at-one-ment with ourselves. How can we restore ourselves to good condition when we feel worse for wear? How do we grow into at-one-ment with our fullest selves? Here's a story from my friend Liz. Liz and I are about the same age, and we are both lifelong Unitarian Universalists. Liz tells it this way. A few years ago, I was at a worship service visiting another Unitarian Universalist congregation, and I realized that an old friend of mine was sitting a few pews behind me. This was a friend who was a lot like me, only a bit older and a bit quieter. The music in the congregation we were visiting was powerful, spiritual, exciting. I sat there feeling the spirit, no doubt swaying or moving my body a little bit as I sat. Suddenly, a movement behind and to the side of me caught my eye, and I turned a little and glanced behind me. My friend was standing up. Almost everybody in the church was sitting down, but she was standing up. And what's more, she was waving her hand, just one hand, high over her head in time with the music. I was shocked. Inexpressibly, instantly shocked and amazed. This is a woman older than me, quieter than me, whiter than me, standing there waving her arm, expressive, comfortable. What in the world? Well, this experience was not where I ended, it's where I started. And it jolted me out of one place, though I did not know it at the time, to another place that I am still journeying toward, a place I have not yet arrived, a place I can envision but not define, an experience I move closer to all the time that I may never finish getting to. Liz went on to explain, I was raised Unitarian Universalist in Newton, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. And that makes me a dyed-in-the-wool Yankee Unitarian Universalist. I don't burn a lot of incense. I don't create or change rituals very readily. I don't like to hold hands for long periods of time with most people. Up north, where I come from, people feel things just as passionately as we do here in the Mid-Atlantic, but you can't tell. You can't tell at all. Up north, we listen with our ears and we process in our heads, and you know, there's not a lot of facial expression required for that. Certainly no movement required. You sit still and you listen and you think about what you hear, and you are honest in your listening and in your thinking. And that's worship. Okay, I'm exaggerating, but not a lot. That's where and what I come from. Hence my shock when my friend was standing and swaying her arm. It's a moment when something shook me out of my comfortable, hidebound Unitarian Universalism, and in shaking me out, gave me an opportunity to move. Liz, my friend, I know from talking to her about this for years, has been on a journey with her Unitarian Universalist faith, and she has been working to listen to her soul. What is her soul telling her? And then she's been trying to live that out. And what I want to say to you this morning is that in general, no matter what aspect of our lives we are talking about, one of the keys to becoming our truest selves is paying attention and listening. Paying attention and listening are not as easy as one might think. This challenge occurs whether we're talking about the spiritual practice of listening to our souls or the more literal forms of listening. It takes practice and support and encouragement to listen well. And I know I'm not alone in my struggles with listening. I recently read that Americans have an estimated average attention span of 22 seconds. I recently read that Americans have an estimated average attention span of 22 seconds. I recently read that Americans have an estimated average attention span of 22 seconds. Okay, just testing if I have set past your attention span. And what I think most of us know, at whatever level we participate, we live in a TV remote control, change the channel quickly, multitasking on the run society. And in many settings, it's countercultural to pay attention and to listen intentionally to others, let alone to our own inner voices. And so here we are, the church, trying to be a little countercultural. We're trying to do that because when we do not pay attention and listen, it can really cost us. Thomas Merton says, "There is in all things a hidden wholeness. The Jack Pines and all of us sentient beings have an integrity. And when we don't take the time to listen to each other, we are at risk of living divided lives. When we're distracted or running on the surface of our lives, we don't know as well how we are called to be in the world. When we pretend about who we are for others, we often begin to forget who we are ourselves. I think most gay folks know the story of living divided lives. I have a friend who has worked as a labor organizer and an inclusion expert at large universities for years. She's especially an expert on gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual inclusivity. She's worked a lot with Big Ten universities. Beth says she's been paid for 30 years to be the professional lesbian in a lot of different places. And she's done it. She's been cool with it because she knows it's brought a lot of good to communities. And Beth says, at the same time, she has never stopped doing what she learned to do as a teenager, which is in some social settings, she passes for being straight. She's at the Department of Motor Vehicles or at a PTO meeting at the local school. She doesn't necessarily like wave the flag, "I'm a lesbian," because why deal with it? And she says a lot of times she can do that. Here's another story of a person who knows about living a divided life, but from the other side of the equation. In one small town in America, a gay man was beat up pretty badly. We know it happens all too much. And a community of folks came together in the wake of that heartbreaking incident to try and create an environment of healing and to make sure, as much as possible, this did not happen again. And one woman came from another town, a very straight woman from a very straight church with very straight theology, let us say, and she said that it was a matter of faith, she was here to help. But she also told the coordinators of that meeting that they needed to know that in order for her to do this work, she would have to leave behind the teachings of her community of origin. And in some ways, she would have to leave behind parts of the relationships she still had with her pastor and her parents and her neighbors. She realized she was living kind of a divided life because her soul told her that theology that says if you act gay, act out on your gayness, it's a sin. It didn't resonate for her. She was coming here to claim more of her wholeness, and she paid a price. I have a new favorite author, Armistead Maupin, M-A-U-P-I-N. He writes a lot of great novels. One is called The Night Listener. One poignant scene involves the main character, Gabriel, reflecting honestly on the dual roles he played in his last romantic partnership and how he was with his ex. Gabriel admits, thinking back, that on the one hand, in that relationship, he was capable of fearless, unconditional love. He was all in. And on the other hand, he was always holding back, bracing against the prospect of imminent loss. He's going through grieving. In that relationship, it was too divided a life. In the future, at least, he wants to be more honest about both those things. Courageous love and fear are happening inside of him in a committed relationship. I personally have had a similar trajectory as my friend Liz. I come out of Midwestern humanist Unitarian Universalism, excellent intellectualism in the pulpit. In my home church, there was good energy, there was inspiration in the preaching and in the beautiful music. And the folks in the pews were pretty quiet during the sermon and the meditation and the offertory. And when I was in my mid-20s, I had a couple different worship experiences. One of them I always remember was in Baltimore at a Unitarian Universalist Urban Church conference. Many of us folks in the pews had our bodies and our voices more involved in the worship experience, and it made me feel more alive. And I thought, you know what? We can do this. We can have varieties of worship experience as Unitarian Universalists. And Liz and I know many of you, are on journeys now in search of worship experiences which continue to cherish and lift up the best of intellectual life in religion, but also fill our hearts and move our souls and our bodies. I am not saying everyone should move more in worship or participate in call and response. I know many folks are claiming their fullest selves by entering more fully into contemplative prayer or meditation or worship, and we have everything in between. It's beautiful. Varieties of religious experience are honored. I'm not saying everybody should be an ally for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender justice, although I hope we will all work to create safe environments where everyone can be who they are and love who they love. What I am saying, and I know many of us are saying for years and decades, is that I hope part of what this place does is empower us to live authentic lives of integrity, allow us to grow into our wholeness, which too often is hidden. Some good news. I know, and many of you know, there are realistic, tangible ways we can continue achieving this. I know this partly because I witness such impressive examples of this in you, the people of this congregation. And we as a congregation value witnessing this in our neighbors, in our coworkers. We cherish people who live authentic lives of integrity. We admire them and look to them and learn from them. That's part of our faith tradition. The great Quaker writer Parker Palmer lifts up a couple of important points here, which I endorse. First, we all have an inner teacher whose guidance is more reliable than anything we can get from doctrine, ideology, collective belief system, institution, or leader. We all have an inner teacher who gives guidance of great value. And second, we all need other people to invite, amplify, and help us to discern our inner teacher's voice. Inner teachers do not do very well in solitary confinement. They need relationship. Circles of trust include small group ministries, the monthly book group, the earth-honoring worship group, the choir practice, the drumming circle, the people who take care of the memorial garden with loving care, and on and on and on. It happens in many places outside of religious life. And circles of trust don't pry into our lives. They don't give advice, pound with advice. They essentially create a safe, respectful environment where Liz and Kent and Beth and Mary and Gabriel and you and you and you can listen to our voices and then try to live out what we hear. This work takes practice, so I just want to give two quick spiritual practices for you. Practice makes progress. First, choose an everyday experience and listen for 5 minutes. I'm not even going to write these down. I know you can remember this. Commuting, cooking, sitting in the park or in your office, and listen for 5 minutes. Don't do it with an agenda, and just notice what you're feeling or thinking. Second practice, listen to another person. Really give them the gift of being with them and listen. Whoever you pick, don't tell them it's a church assignment. Might influence the experience. Don't think about what you're going to say in response. Just pay attention and notice how easy it is for you to listen. If it's hard, why? Maybe reflect. Don't beat yourself up, but why is it hard? These listening skills are cross-fertilizing. If you practice and improve your abilities to be a truly present listener for others, you improve at listening to your soul. Patricia Loring says that when we develop in a circle of listening, we can relinquish our entrenched positions or defenses. Let down your wall. And then, stripped of the need to defend ourselves against somebody else trying to correct us, we may be freed of the need to shore up our own egos. And then we may be able to sink beneath the superficial constructs of our personas to the level of ourselves where the spirit is moving in the depths, where some new thing is being called forth. We can go down to that place where self, where the spirit is moving and some new thing is being called forth in you. When we are empowered to discern and share about our true identities, we overcome our fear that our inner light will be extinguished or our inner darkness exposed. And honestly, folks, I think that deep down, most every one of us is hungry for more light and life, not less. When you practice listening, you hear. When you pay attention, you notice. This orientation and these skills can help every one of us to come full circle. Oh, how I pray that we might all be able to say with awe and wonder, now I become myself. It's taken time, many years and places, but yes, now I become myself. At this time, I invite you to listen. Let's take a precious moment and listen. Amen. Now let's join together.